This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of Herding Code. This is an exciting episode this week. We're talking with Brad Abrams and Tim Heuer about the official release of Silverlight 2. So let's just jump right into it. Guys, can you introduce yourselves?
Sure. So I'm Brad Abrams. I'm the product unit manager for the application framework team. And we're building some line of business extensions for Silverlight, as well as doing the managed extensibility framework.
And my name is Tim Heuer. I am one of the community program managers for the Silverlight developer community.
Okay. Well, I think kind of an obvious question is just what's new in Silverlight 2. Obviously, it's a gigantic leap from Silverlight 1.0. I was just wondering if Tim, you wrote a really nice kind of overview blog post that talked about what was new. I was wondering if you guys would want to just kind of highlight what's the big things in Silverlight 2?
Sure. I think, you know, the obvious answer is for those who've been looking at Silverlight is what's new in Silverlight 2 is essentially, you know, being able to write rich internet applications on the platform that Microsoft developers know and love using the tools that we know and love, right? So that's Visual Studio, the .NET framework, and just being able to do that. I'm not sure that's necessarily new, you know, news-wise, right? Silverlight 2 was announced earlier, and we've had some betas and CTPs, and most recently with the beta 2 having a lot of customers actually going live in production applications with that. So as we moved on to release, you know, we brought in a lot of fit and finish. We've added three new controls. We've announced things like our Silverlight control pack that will bring a lot of new controls and learning and debugging techniques for developers for Silverlight 2, in addition to, you know, some enhancements that customers were asking for based on the beta 2 feedback, some enhanced networking support, and you know, things like that.
Brad, is there anything else that comes to mind as, you know, just big features?
No, I mean, I think a lot of people that have been tracking the Microsoft space closely have been seeing what we've done with Silverlight, but maybe, you know, for some people that haven't been following us quickly, I think especially Silverlight 2, we're really broadening the reach of what you can do with .NET and managed code today. I speak to a lot of developers who are skilled up in ASP.NET and WinForms. They know C#, they know how to do things with the .NET framework. And the great thing with Silverlight is that now they can take that knowledge, the knowledge they have of C# or VB.NET and ASP.NET, and expand that and build a whole new class of applications, this whole new rich internet application class. And I think that really broadens the reach of the .NET framework. And then transitively, if you happen to already be schooled up on the .NET framework, it extends the kinds of applications that you can go build. And so I'm really excited about that.
And Scott?
So I haven't been following the Silverlight 2 news for quite some time. Well, I've been, you know, aware of it, but I haven't been slobbering over it as much as some people I can mention. Maybe slobbering isn't the right word. But I was just wondering what the relationship is between the DLR and Silverlight 2. It seems like, you know, Iron Ruby and the DLR hasn't released yet, but when Silverlight 2 was first announced, back when it was still 1.1, there was a big emphasis on, you know, the DLR coming along with Silverlight and being able to run with it. And I'm just wondering what the if there's any news on the release schedule for Iron Ruby, Iron Python, and the DLR, or if you're doing Silverlight 2 development now, if you're still in the C# and VB.NET, and, you know, for Matt Podwasaki, the F# world.
Sure. So, yeah, we've done, all, as you mentioned, because we have the CLR, it's actually the exact same code base for the CLR that we use to power millions of websites across the internet today. It's that exact same industry strength CLR, and that is very cool. because it enables a wide variety of programming languages, from C# and VB.NET to COBOL and F# and whatnot. But in particular, especially in this web space, we have a set of dynamic languages. So we've built out the DLR to make it much easier to build dynamic languages on top of the CLR. And we've done the work to actually port the DLR so that it can work on top of the subset of the framework that is available in Silverlight. And so, as you mentioned, we've released kind of previews of that in the past, and we're still kind of 100% committed to getting that out. We're also simultaneously working on rolling it in as a core part of .NET Framework 4.0, and so the team is kind of doing a bunch of different things right now. So I think that they're actively working on getting something out for 2.0, and I'd expect to see something in the not too distant future there.
Talking about, you know, like Iron Python and Iron Ruby and just kind of the broader community that Silverlight fits into, I wondered, one interesting thing that was part of the announcement was the Eclipse plugin. And so I wondered if somebody could talk about that.
Sure. So one of the things that we announced Monday as part of the official, you know, press release and everything was the announcement of the partnership with a company called Soyatech, which is a French company, and they're also a member of the Eclipse Foundation. And so Microsoft is actually, you know, partially funding this project. Soyatech is the developers behind this. And what they're providing is this effort, you know, this Eclipse for Silverlight effort is going to be essentially an Eclipse plugin to do Silverlight development, you know, via another IDE, to be able to, you know, see that kind of split view that we see in Visual Studio, render the Silverlight, edit the XAML, provide IntelliSense, and again, provide another choice for developers to write Silverlight applications. Now, initially, what was announced was kind of this intent of this project. There is a really, really early preview available, and there is a roadmap that brings us into second quarter or second half of next year for the final release. So it's certainly not, you know, boxed up and on the shelves in Best Buy right now, but there is a plan going path. I think it's pretty exciting. You know, I really like when we're embracing a lot of this openness and providing a lot of choice for developers.
So yeah, I'm pretty excited about the fact that there's going to be an Eclipse plugin for Silverlight, and but I'm also wondering if this deal with, I guess it's not with the Eclipse Foundation, it's with a company who's providing the plugin, correct?
That's correct.
So this is separate from the Apache Software Foundation grant that Microsoft. Well, they're not really grant, but the support that they gave during OSCon this summer, right?
Yes. I mean, this is a separate project with, you know, Soyatech is an Eclipse Foundation member, but this is a separate funded initiative, as far as I'm aware.
Tim, one other thing that was interesting, and when you were talking about kind of the open Silverlight's position in the open world was you mentioned this open specification promise, and I wasn't aware of that before, so I wondered if you could just kind of give a you know, let our listeners know what that's about.
Absolutely. The open specification promise was something that Microsoft announced, I think it was real early this year, even if not late last year, was basically our intent to provide, I actually think it was part of, it launched as a part of IE8's kind of initiative and coming out party. It was our intent to provide, you know, a little bit more openness behind a lot of our specifications and certain aspects of our products, XAML being one of them. We've always published the XAML specification for WPF, and what we kind of reiterated in our announcement Monday was an extension of that, being able to provide the Silverlight-specific vocabulary XAML as a part of that open specification promise. And what's really cool about that is, you know, it's not something that mainstream developers may not care about, but if you're an ISV or you're someone that is wanting to build, you know, let's say tooling around Silverlight, this is something that's pretty exciting. I mean, you don't have to spelunk code anymore. You know, you have the actual specifications for what Silverlight and the XAML and the intent of that vocabulary is. And I know, John, I know you're a vector guy, and I look at projects like Inkscape is one that could absolutely benefit from having these specifications out there and available to them. You know, Inkscape is a vector graphics tool, and they have, late last year, they checked in a code change to their product that, you know, you can open an SVG file and save it as Microsoft XAML. And, you know, I'm not sure if they've updated it since Silverlight's gone through these iterations, but absolutely this is, you know, this the open specification promise and the Silverlight vocabulary, you know, that's a great example for how someone can benefit. And again, that's not a mainstream developer like you and I are going to actually consume these specifications, but we will use products that vendors have created and you know, solid products that are a result of having access to those specifications.
Now, is this open specification, is this like an ECMA standard, kind of like the C-sharp and I want to say Rotor, but I'm not sure if Rotor was submitted to ECMA or not?
I think that's a great question. I think the open specification promise, and in a lot of the information on the OSP is a part of our is, you know, can be found at microsoft.com/open-source as a part of some of those initiatives. But I really think the OSP is more of just kind of an umbrella program, if that's for lack of a better word, of saying, you know, here's our intent, here's things we're doing as a part of the open specification promise. So the Silverlight XAML is one of them. WPF XAML is another example. The IE8 test specifications that we're using to test IE8 is another example of that. So I look at it as more of a program.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing I would add is we're definitely open to people's feedback. So, you know, if people think it would be super valuable to do a more formal kind of standards approach to that, we're trying to be super open with what we're doing with XAML and Silverlight in general. So, you know, if people have ideas, some specific things that they'd like to be able to accomplish or licensing things, just drop us a line, you know, drop Tim or I a line, and we'll definitely try to route you to the right person.
So while we're talking about open stuff, you know, I wondered if there's any kind of update on, I know you guys aren't actually building the Mono integration and, you know, the Moonlight plugin, but I wondered if there's kind of any official word from them on when Moonlight's going to ship with 2.0 support.
Yeah, so actually, just tonight I got an email from Miguel Diacaza. He sent me a VM with the latest build of Mono, and he's got a good chunk of Silverlight 2 already up and running, passing a bunch of the tests. So he, unfortunately, they're not quite able to give a date yet, but I'll actually be at the Ajax World Conference in next week, and I'll be demoing kind of where they are so far in Moonlight. So it's pretty exciting. It's very exciting for us to see somebody like Miguel and Novell in general really really validating kind of what we've built with Silverlight and giving us lots of really good feedback. So it's been a lot of fun.
Say, Brad, just to back up a second, if you were in an elevator ride with a developer who had never heard of Silverlight before, what's the 30-second talk that you would give to that person to tell them what is this and how can they use it?
Sure. So Silverlight is a cross-browser, cross-platform plugin for building rich internet applications using the .NET framework set of technologies. So just to unpack that a little bit, I think we're at a kind of interesting point in the software development world where I think there's kind of really two unmistakable trends with lots of the customers I talk to. One is Customers are really seeking kind of the simplicity of deployment experience that they get for web-based applications. We're seeing more and more applications kind of pushing the web to kind of the end, kind of what is possible with the web. And we're seeing kind of the kind of web-style applications being kind of a preferred answer for many sorts of applications, both internal as well as internet-facing apps. And at the same time, we're also seeing another trend, and that is a trend towards richness really differentiated user experiences. On the consumer front, I think that looks like applications that are engage the user, very interactive. And then on the business front, I think that looks like, you know, we're thinking a lot more about how can we make applications that save 5 minutes on every transaction. And if we can save employees' time within the company, we can save on the bottom line, and that is super important in today's world. So I think Silverlight fits right in that spot of wanting a web-based solutions. A lot of CTOs are really asking for, you know, build the next set of apps on top of web-based solutions. At the same time, it also leverages your programmer skills and expertise in .NET, as well as lets them build the rich internet experiences that we know we need, the kind of client experiences that we know users need by using Silverlight. Does that help?
Absolutely.
So, Brad, I mean, an obvious question is, like, as a developer, I love Silverlight because I get to work in my development environment. I get all the power of Visual Studio and the .NET framework. But as browsers are just continuing to innovate in JavaScript and just getting incredibly fast, and then libraries like jQuery are making it easier to build rich internet applications using just JavaScript, I'm wondering, in addition to the tooling, how Silverlight continues to compete with just JavaScript and Ajax development.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that, because you're kind of warming me up going to this Ajax World Conference next week. First I got to say I love Ajax. I worked on ASP.NET and specifically ASP Ajax for a number of years, and I really don't think in a lot of ways that Silverlight competes head to head with Ajax. In fact, we work super hard to build the HTML bridge with Silverlight, so you can write jQuery code that goes and manipulates the Silverlight DOM, that goes and changes Silverlight elements. At the same time, you can write C# code in Silverlight that goes and manipulates the HTML DOM and changes things there. So I really think there's a better together story there with Ajax and Silverlight, and they target kind of a little different sorts of scenarios and developer experiences. So in terms of, you know, why, as I talk to developers about Silverlight, kind of some of the things that come up is, you know, there's a set of developers that are trained up on C#. They really like the high level language and kind of productivity and strong typing that C# and VB.NET gives them, and that general tooling experience that you mentioned. And so being you know, almost all reasonable applications have a server component and a client component. And being able to write those in the same language, being able to write C# on the server and C# on the client, is super compelling. And today, it's a lot tougher to do that with JavaScript. What a lot of people end up doing is writing C# on the server, JavaScript on the client, Java on the server, JavaScript on the client, and the worlds are very different. So that's definitely one. Another big benefit I think you get with Silverlight is consistency across browsers. For every Ajax app I've written, I honestly have to go in and test that thing in Firefox and Safari, on Windows, on the Mac, with some fly-by-night company comes out with a browser, I have to go test it with that as well. The great thing with Silverlight is you get to leverage the huge testing resources that Microsoft has. And we go and test Silverlight against every browser, every service pack, as soon as it comes out. And so we know what works, and we go in and make sure that your application works consistently everywhere. So I think that's definitely a huge benefit. And then the last one I'd mention is the differentiated experience you can get. Today, on any platform and any browser, you can go get video and vector graphics and audio and high-end video streaming, and that is something that's tough to get everywhere.
Yeah, I'd just like to add to what Brad's saying too, and you know, as part of that, you know, an extension to the 30-second elevator pitch almost. I hear a lot, especially when Silverlight first came out. I hear a lot of, you know, we get tons of emails. You know, how do I port my AJAX application? How do I port my ASP.NET application to Silverlight? And it's I think it's important to note that, you know, reading between the lines of what Brad said, you know, Silverlight's not a replacement for any technology, just as much as, you know, AJAX not a replacement for any technology. You know, the best technology is the one that's going to get the job done most effectively with the best user experience and meet all the requirements of the customers. And I think, you know, Silverlight is just an extension to the .NET tool set. It's a complementary technology to ASP.NET. It's a complementary technology to our server technologies with the integration with WCF and Astoria, and it's a complementary technology to AJAX. So I think, you know, I cringe when I hear people say, you know, yeah, you know, where's the conversion tool? You know, where do I run my my web application through? And out comes this, you know, this monolithic Zap. And you know, you want to make sure that people get it that, you know, it is a rich client platform in the browser, but it doesn't have to always be seen as a rip and replace. You know, they can operate in the same world. The HTML bridge makes, you know, Silverlight content appear as if it's you know, accessible through as it's a part of the HTML DOM almost. So I think they are complementary. They go very, very well together.
Scott, you had a question?
Yeah, so I may be still in the dark ages of Silverlight development. There may have been some advancements in the technology since I last looked at it, which was 1.1. And I'm just wondering that there's been a big push in web apps specifically towards this model view controller architecture and kind of a separation of concerns and layering of applications. And I'm wondering if, you know, if we deploy the Big Ben to Silverlight app, and it all gets downloaded to the browsers, does that mean that our entire domain architecture is then having to run inside the plugin in the browser, or are we back to kind of separating out the layers by using network calls or AJAX or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I think Silverlight 2, just generically out of the gate, has a couple of interesting benefits, and my team's been really digging into some of this. One of the fundamental premises with some of the model view controller and MVC systems, at the root of it is this idea of trying to get separation of concerns. And a good way to think about that is, how can I have my UI piece be as... in terms of the logic in the UI piece, be as sparse as possible, because the stuff in the UI piece is very difficult to test. So I want to kind of factor out any logic from that UI piece as possible. The great part with Silverlight, and true with WPF as well, is because of the richness that we have with XAML, we're really encouraging a model where the XAML encapsulates the UI piece, the actual look and feel of the application. And then any of the business logic, you can go ahead and put that in a view model that is separately testable, and we have a couple of applications like that. I can give a link to Nikhil Qatari's blog where he goes through actually building a view model with Silverlight. He's doing that as part of some experimentation on how we're going to kind of enable that in a deeper way in a future version of Silverlight. But that would definitely be a good place to look at. The other interesting place, as I alluded to earlier, as you're building out these Silverlight applications, the truth is any meaningful application is going to have a server piece and a client piece. You're still going to have to do some stuff on the web, on the web server. And so it's really important as you're building those out to use a model for the server that also lets those be separate, testable, separate of the Silverlight client. So again, using some in-tier technology like WCF or specifically the ADO.NET data services or Astoria, then that helps you be able to separate those things, separate the concerns so that they're more easily testable.
Kevin, did you have any questions?
So one of the things about Silverlight is that it sort of represents a parallel .NET framework, and I'm curious as to, you know, as you guys develop new technologies, new libraries, you know, think about things like Prism, like Unity, you know, is the intent to support both platforms as, you know, equally going forward, or will there be sort of this split where some stuff gets ported to Silverlight and some stuff's only on .NET?
Yeah, so absolutely. We definitely do not think we're building two different frameworks. We've been, in fact, a good chunk of the code that we're building, the core CLR, as I mentioned, is literally the exact same CLR built one for the other. And we're definitely looking at both for our own engineering benefits, how we get savings across from Silverlight to the full framework, as well as for customers how to do that. So I think what you'll see is, for example, we've started doing some work on the composite application work for WPF. We're calling it Prism. And we've done a Prism V1 that was all about WPF. And now we're thinking about the biggest question we got out of that is, how does that work with Silverlight? So we're doing some work on Prism V2, where we're really looking hard at how you build out an application that has one set of business logic. And it just gets built twice, one for Silverlight and once for the full framework. So we're definitely looking at how to have a coherent framework that spans the server, the client, the web client, as well as on to devices. Yeah.
We had a question from one of our listeners, Eric Kemp, and he asked what's being done to encourage enterprise adoption, especially in a climate where a lot of enterprise shops are still running on IE6. So I wonder if you could talk about that, Tim.
Yeah, you know, IE6 is a supported browser, I believe, unless things have changed. But, you know, more importantly, you know, I think that the question of what's there to encourage enterprise adoption as a platform to build enterprise applications. And I think the behind the firewall story is particularly compelling for, you know, there's different perspectives, right? You have enterprise developers and you have kind of enterprise IT infrastructure and those guys. And if we look at the different types of spectrum of application development and what IT has to support, you know, we have web applications and client applications with installers, and you know, everyone tries to get to a, you know, a corporate standard image so that they can control it and have a common platform that can be supported. So I think from an enterprise adoption standpoint, Silverlight as a client technology, as a rich client technology, is attractive by some means in that area. It's, you know, it's not something, it's not an EXE that has to be installed on the machine, the application. I mean, not the, of course, the plugin has to be there to exist. But we are also doing things from a platform standpoint for the other side of the house for the developers. So one of the things that and PDC, the Microsoft Developer Conference coming up. We'll start to share. You know, PDC is always a future-looking conference, and we'll share some insight into what we're doing for making it easier to develop. If you can see me, I'm doing air quotes. Line of business applications, and I think that will help enterprise adoption, because I think enterprise, you know, the enterprise developer, the traditional line of business application, expects certain types of frameworks to be there, certain kind of utility in the framework to be able to, you know, quickly go from nothing to deploy of, you know, an HR system or some type of, you know, decision support system. So we're acutely aware of that, and moving forward with enhancements to the platform, enhancements to the framework that will enable writing enterprise applications a lot easier than they already are today, in my opinion.
Scott, you can just jump in.
So here's the big question that always gets asked. When or how can you take a Silverlight app offline?
Yes. So the kind of I guess I'm interested in what are the scenarios that you would want to do that? And I'm not, it's kind of more of a rhetorical question. I look at the Adobe's Air platform, and dare I say it, but from a public consumer standpoint, and it's hard to see applications behind the firewall. There's far greater successes in every platform, Microsoft, all our competitors behind the firewall, right, that nobody talks about. But when I look at it from a consumer standpoint and from rich application standpoint, if Twitter didn't exist, would Air be successful in the consumer standpoint? I just haven't seen a lot of demand for these type of applications. But that's not an excuse to say that, it's not interesting and it shouldn't be done. Yeah, so the offline scenario, in all reality, when we look at the customer feedback that's being provided to the team, and we have to prioritize things with the resources that we have, the offline scenario, from what I've seen so far, hasn't hit that high level of a bar from enough customer feedback, again, relative to other things that we're trying to accomplish and enhancements at the core level and another thing that people are asking for.
So let's look at it from the enterprise point of view, since we were kind of discussing adoption in the enterprise. So you've got a sales team, and they've got a Silverlight app that they use to report their sales figures or, possible leads or things like that, and they're flying a lot, and or they're staying in hotels where Wi-Fi internet access isn't available. So is it just left up to the developer to interface with something like IE8's persistent cache or Google Gears or something like that to route remote calls through those kinds of persistence mechanisms on the client?
I think you bring up a very good key scenario when you mentioned, talking about the offline scenario was specific to enterprise applications. So it's it is absolutely possible to integrate with some of these offline storage capabilities, right? With Gears and some of the stuff that IE8's coming out with, like you mentioned. But if we look at it from an enterprise perspective in that scenario, typically an enterprise will have a little bit more control over their requirements. And given a known environment, that type of scenario might lend itself better to WPF application or a ClickOnce application or XAML browser app or something like that, where you have the ability to say, yeah, I'm targeting Windows only. And the benefit here and the progress that we're moving toward it with Silverlight, and if you look at Silverlight 2 release from Beta 2 and the breaking changes documents, you'll notice that a lot of those breaking changes were to bring WPF compatibility. So there is a story here for the enterprise of saying, that's that sales scenario of, hey, we have the absolute richest application as our WPF application, and that's that's the outlook that to use an analogy that our salespeople use. But perhaps they don't have their laptop with them, or all they have is their mobile or something like that. There could be a lot of reuse of the WPF XAML and a lot of those service infrastructure to create kind of the Outlook Express edition of that type of application. So, again, I think in the enterprise scenario, I think the offline requirements lend themselves a little bit better to targeting, a specific platform. In the short term, I think. I think as company ITs look to manage resources better, that offline scenario will probably, from a web application standpoint, will probably get more exciting. And, again, it's something we're definitely looking at. It's just one of those things we're trying to prioritize with a lot of other things as well.
Is there any guidance on or sample applications that show that kind of code reuse model? Because I think that it's very interesting and it definitely makes a lot of sense, but I haven't seen examples of applications that actually do that are both Silverlight and WPF. And I'm just wondering if there are some, and I'm missing them.
One of the ones we have is some of the controls that we're working on. We've actually made sure that those exact same control source code works for both Silverlight as well as WPF, just to vet out the model and prove that that's possible. So if you, we actually ship all the source code to many of the controls that we ship as part of Silverlight, and you can just go grab those. And you'll notice in there, there's just a small number of places where you see some if-defs around making sure it'll compile for both.
I think to add to that, I'll point out a couple specific examples and then plans on what we're doing for the developer community as well. So with the release of Silverlight 2, Scott Gu did update his dig example, which is, you know, it's not an enterprise application, of course, but it is a simple example of showing, you know, he goes through 7-step process of creating this Silverlight application, and the final process being, you know, let me go ahead and cut and paste that code into a WPF application. So, you know, that's at its core is one of the simplest examples. One of our regional directors, and I'm probably going to murder his name, but Jonas Falso had created for TechEd in New Zealand, had created a Silverlight application to track scuba dive logs. So if you're a diver, you know, you record your dives and your logs. And so he created a Silverlight application to do that. Now, he did it using the view model framework that that Brad had mentioned earlier. And what that has enabled him to do is get a ton of reuse to be able to create that same application in a WPF experience. So he has actually more full end-to-end example that is a really good demonstration of both reusing business logic, reusing UI in the XAML layer, and then taking it, you know, once you bring it to the desktop, taking advantage of perhaps more resources that you can use. Another thing that we're planning on doing from the Silverlight community team is trying to better our resources for these types of questions. So one of the things that we're launching in the near future is, and actually the plan is this week, so hopefully it will hit, is on Silverlight.net we're going to have, and for lack of creative people on our team, we're calling it the application corner, where we're going to be able to demonstrate, you know, a lot of these things of how you can develop line of business applications. And one of those topics that we're planning on tackling is exactly that of, like, okay, now I have this Silverlight application, how do I move that along the continuum to create that WPF application?
So just to follow that up a little bit more, so would the approach generally that you guys would recommend would be to create the Silverlight version first and then sort of figure out how to transition that to WPF? Or would the other way work as well? Or does one have more pain than the other?
I think the consultant hat in me would say it depends, right, on the actual application. But if you look at exactly what Silverlight is and what WPF is, and you say, okay, you know, Silverlight XAML is a subset, and where it's currently at is a subset, it makes sense that, you know, you're going to get more use out of starting with Silverlight and being able to more easily port that to WPF. You know, if you have a full-blown WPF application that relies on certain resources and things like that, and you expect to, you know, 100% go down level to a subset framework, I'm not sure that's a reasonable expectation. So I think, you know, if you know, the requirements will demand what the right platform is, but if you know that you're going to want to have both, I think it, from a mindset, it makes sense to at least look at Silverlight as a starting point and, you know, have it grow into the WPF application. Oh, you also mentioned pain points as well. And again, I think that's probably another it depends on different areas. I think there's unique characteristics that make it different. So, you know, an example is web services, right? So in Silverlight, web services are only asynchronous versus in a WPF application, they don't have to be. So there's one example of kind of, you know, not necessarily a pain point, but more of a paradigm shift of development and kind of that infrastructure that you might have to set up.
So a couple of weeks ago, we chatted with Ted Leung, and we'd kind of talked about how corporations can participate in and kind of foster and communicate with open source communities that spring up around the technologies that they create. And one of the things that he mentioned was that when Adobe decided to open source the Flex and Flash specification and so forth, that they had this group of people that were just dying to contribute. And, you know, they were just willing to give back stuff to Adobe for free. You know, components, bugs, patch, you know, bug fixes, patches, whatever. And I see that kind of desire springing up around Silverlight as well. So, you know, Microsoft kind of has a core set of controls that's coming out. One of the criticisms of early Silverlight was that, you know, there was no combo box and you had to roll your own kind of controls. And so I'm wondering if, with the success of other projects like MVC Contrib, where the community has gone in and said, okay, well, you know, we like what the ASP.NET MVC team is doing, but here's some other, you know, solutions or other things you can use within your MVC app to do things differently according to your own conventions, your own kind of inject your own opinion into your app. And so I'm kind of wondering what kind of an ecosystem you're going to set up around Silverlight if we're going to be able to contribute, you know, user controls back or, you know, different. I can't even think of any now. So I'm looking at things like, you know, Ninject has a support for Silverlight now, and I'm wondering if, you know, that kind of stuff eventually percolates its way into the main kind of content sites for Silverlight or the accepted literature, if you can wrap that with air quotes, or, you know, kind of how that's all going to work, how you're going to interact with the community that is sure to spring up around this, or if it's just going to kind of be the business as usual, you know, the Telerik, the Data Dynamics just put out their big expensive suite of controls for WinForm, Silverlight, whatever's, and, you know, those are your options.
I think what you'll see is a little of both. And in fact, I'll answer your question in reverse. And you look at some of the big control vendors, and I look at DevExpress as a good example. They're already starting to foster those type of things in the community. They've provided a Silverlight data grid completely free with source. So, you know, they're contributing back to the community in that regard. The second thing is we already are seeing a spike in interest in the community. There already is a project called Silverlight Contrib. And the second project that I point to was a part of the announcement on Monday was the Silverlight Control Pack, which is the same team. They're growing, of course, conceptually, it's going to follow the same path as the Ajax Control Toolkit, where initially, you know, it's a team of Microsoft people contributing back controls and themes to Silverlight, putting them out on CodePlex. Maybe some of those will move back to the core. Maybe they won't. You know, we're already seeing that ecosystem occurring right now, and I think we will be able to evolve that ecosystem. You know, I'll point to the Control Pack as an example. We do have plans, you know, there is a roadmap for the controls that will be delivered from that Agile team. They're being deployed on CodePlex, they're being deployed with the open source license, the MSPL, and they'll be able to, you know, developers will be able to learn from them, extend them, contribute back to them, and understand that model of control development. And eventually, some of those roadmap tools may be in the core of Silverlight and be able to, be a part of the package. I think when we look at Microsoft and how do we look at community contributions, you know, it's not as agile of a process as I think the community would like it to be. But it is happening, right? I mean, you look at the announcement around jQuery and stuff like that. The DLR is another good example. You know, it didn't initially start out as like everybody can contribute, but if you pay attention to anything about the Iron Ruby lists, it's an extremely active development community. There's a lot of contributions and peer review going on. So from a Silverlight perspective, that ecosystem has already started. It's growing. We're going to foster it too. You know, we're going to support it. I think it's great that community developers look and say, this isn't there and maybe it's coming, but, you know, let's rally as a community and create a stopgap between it. And, you know, maybe it's the better control of the two, as an example there.
So we had a question from one of our listeners, Matt Hamilton, and he asked, what's IE's relationship with Silverlight? For instance, using the DLR in JavaScript, offline storage, which was already discussed. But there's kind of a natural fusion where it would be nice if you could use Silverlight or use IE knowing that Silverlight was there, or leverage the two working together. And I just wondered if there's any kind of like long range thing. And obviously Matt did too, asking this question.
Yeah. Well, certainly we think of IE as being a great web browser. And so we want to make sure Silverlight is a great citizen within IE. We spent a bunch of time with the IE team, making sure that we're talking and ensuring that IE is a fabulous host for Silverlight, and Silverlight plugs in super well to IE. Of course, it's also very important that Silverlight work with all the browsers that are out there, so that you get your customers get a consistent experience regardless of what browser they happen to use. So that's kind of the top order bit for Silverlight, is making sure it works well everywhere. But we obviously are interested in making doing technology sharing, and so we are interested in working, and we do work very closely with the IE team on how we can share rendering technologies, because there's obviously some stuff there, how we can make sure the using JavaScript in IE is very easy to reach into Silverlight, and all that stuff kind of works well. But again, there's really nothing special in the relationship between IE and Silverlight. Silverlight works in really every browser. Do you think that addressed the question? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think people would like to hear that IE is going to use the DLR and that there's going to be kind of a deep integration. And I think there's kind of a hope that at some point IE will just bundle Silverlight. I know there's probably legal concerns there and all that, but that's something I think everyone would like.
Yeah,
to...
yeah. Yeah, I mean, certainly Microsoft is interested in driving, make sure every Windows customer gets IE, and as many customers as possible get Silverlight. And so there's definitely some desire to try to make sure those things come together nicely. And we're kind of looking at what is in the best interest of customers in terms of having things kind of work well together, ship together, that sort of thing.
Scott?
So... I'm going to go ahead and ask the big question. It's kind of not necessarily obvious, but it seems to be accepted that Silverlight is kind of the competitor to Flash plus Flex in the marketplace. And Flash has a huge install base. I guess how do you guys plan to knock Flash off? Or is it not a matter of knocking them off? Are the two technologies complementary, like jQuery and MVC or ASP.NET Ajax?
Yeah, the Flash. Somebody has to ask that in every Silverlight conversation. What's the Flash question there? So I think in some sense we play in the same space. I got to say, Flash does have has been out there a long time, and they have a lot of people using the technology. I think Silverlight does bring some different stuff to the table, so it just kind of depends on what you're interested in and what solution you're bringing. If you look at some of the big customers that we've had, for example, with the Olympics and kind of what technology they choose and why do they choose to use that technology, there were a couple of interesting things for why they specifically chose to use Silverlight. One was just the back-end infrastructure to do kind of a large site like that, Tim, I'm sure, knows the numbers, but it's like a bazillion streams or something, thousands of hours of content. They had a massive server farm. It's literally the largest media delivery ever done. And so being able to use proven server technology like Windows Server there with Windows Media Server, which is a server-side technology that's been out for years and years and is very trusted, really held the confidence of the Olympics, the IOC, as well as NBC in that endeavor. The other thing that they really liked that they couldn't get with Flash is kind of the variable bit rate that they had, so they could deliver, dynamically change the encoding and get a different kind of bit rate quality based on whatever bandwidth you happen to have at that moment. And that's something that they looked, they kind of were very happy to see in Silverlight, and those two things together really coupled to make NBC choose Silverlight for that. So I think you're going to see a set of issues like that really make people kind of want to look at using Silverlight for some of these solutions.
And I think to add to that, it's a great question when we look at, you know, Flash undoubtedly has a huge market penetration, but it's important to note that when we start talking about, you know, rich internet applications and line of business applications, that there is a differentiation between the between Flash and Flex. And so, you know, we can say Flash is at, you know, X percent on every desktop, but that's not representative necessarily of Flex and what you know, what application developers are looking for in a platform. So that, you know, there's that aspect of it. Not to knock Flash or Flex, they're great technologies, and people will choose the tools that are most comfortable to them and they're going to be most effective for the job. I think when we look at what Microsoft also provides, you know, Visual Studio is you know, the gold standard of IDEs, and having a rock solid C# developer being able to now extend his reach to a rich client platform in the browser without really having to learn that much is huge for the Microsoft ecosystem. So, you know, that the market penetration will grow because developers will choose to use Silverlight, I think. And the key behind that is, as I always look, is, you know, content is king. You know, if people are not going to install something that they don't know about unless they really want to see that content. And, you know, maybe that's the next Tetris game. You know, maybe that's NBC Olympics. You know, I certainly don't think it's the Battleship Gray application that, you know, a drag and drop developer is used to developing. So, you know, we are going to be, you know, Silverlight and Flash and other rich platforms are really, really raising the bar for expectations of users on the web. And that's a good thing. Competition is a good thing for innovation.
I think I speak for everyone when I say I hope that the next big Silverlight app does not punch the monkey and win a prize.
That does remind me, you know, one of the really, you know, hot uses of Flash is a sort of casual gaming market. And I'm curious if you guys are doing anything to target that market. You know, any libraries? Have you seen anybody doing any sort of casual gaming stuff with the Silverlight platform?
Yeah, I'd love to speak to that. It is a growing market. I've been personally involved in three projects with casual gaming. One of the first kind of broader, you know, I won't call it commercial games, but full-featured games was a game called Zero Gravity. It was based on Silverlight 1.1. And it was a project that I actually started out doing. And then as Silverlight 2 evolved, Miniclip, which is the largest online casual gaming provider in the world, actually looked out and reached out to one of our Silverlight partners to build two games, one on Silverlight 1 that's on their site, and they have a Silverlight 2 game that's on their site as well. It is, you know, it's an interesting platform for gaming because it enables, you know, having managed code that's running on the browser, being able to do a lot of these physics, a lot of these calculations, you know, a lot faster than traditional JavaScript is huge. You look at other games like Line Rider, which was more recently, that was a Flash game that, as they enhanced it, they just recently ported it to Silverlight. And if you talk to the developers of that, you know, they'll tell you their kind of enjoyment of working in C# to deal with a lot of that logic. So it absolutely is a great platform for building casual games. Our casual gaming platform, Microsoft's in MSN Games, is looking at how they can enable their gaming platform, you know, for example, their scoring engine, et cetera, how they can create libraries for Silverlight developers to say, hey, if you're already developing, you know, the next, you know, Wicked, Bejeweled or whatever, Here's a C# library you can drop right into your project and integrate with our system as well. So our platform's looking at that. Like I mentioned, Miniclip enabled that for their particular projects. There's an MVP out there, Bill Reese, who does a lot in some of the casual gaming. There's a lot of engines out there. There was a port of the Farseer physics engine. There's great community involvement around creating 3D engines. The one that comes to mind is the Balder 3D engine. It's very interesting. There's also a lot of interest in crossover between Silverlight game development and XNA game development, and how you can, just as much as we talk about how can I write one application that targets Silverlight and WPF, how can I write one application that targets Silverlight as a casual gaming platform and XNA as a full-blown gaming platform. And so those conversations are happening within the community as well.
So, Tim, you bring up the appeal of the high-performance calculation in Silverlight, and I'm wondering if you can speak to one of the things that was interesting, one of the cool demos when Silverlight 1.1 was first demoed at MIX was the chess application where the calculations are shown where, JavaScript's working away and Silverlight trounces JavaScript because it's doing way more calculations. And just wondering if there's any kind of like interesting statistics or information on just performance of Silverlight in the release version.
I think I'll use Brad's numbers. I think it's like 1.6 bajillion is the performance increase. But seriously, I don't have the performance stats off the top of my head. The chess game actually was ported to release code. It was just put up there on the community gallery on Silverlight.net today. So you can kind of do a comparison of, your probably at this point, your memory of what it is versus what it's kind of showing right now. I'm running it right now, and it's looking like, the JavaScript numbers are about, 3,000 nodes per second versus the C# competitor that I'm playing is about, 140,000 nodes per second. So we're still seeing a great improvement over those traditional JavaScript engines.
Yeah, and just to add to that, as I mentioned before, the actual core execution engine here, the just-in-time compiler and the garbage collector, this is very mature technology that we're building on and that's being actively developed and improved over time. So it's really a very first-class virtual machine that underlies Silverlight. It's not something we just kind of whip together to get something out. It is literally that exact same code base. So I certainly expect the JavaScript VMs to be getting better over time, but the investment we're putting in the core CLR that runs in Silverlight as well as full .NET and powers large parts of Windows as well as our server businesses, I expect that to more than keep up as well.
I have a question regarding performance, and it's kind of a high-level, technical question. So recently, I think it was .NET 3.5, WPF started to use the GPU for rendering lots of effects, and I was wondering if any of that carried over to the Silverlight plugin.
Right now in Silverlight 2, we do not use GPU acceleration. It's something that has been discussed in the team, and the core team, the runtime team is looking at that and how we might accomplish that. Of course, it adds some complexities when you start looking at hardware acceleration and cross-platform type development. But it's definitely something that's being examined. It is not a part of Silverlight 2 right now.
Kevin?
So I'm sure you can't give any specifics, but I'm curious as to if you can tell us anything about what to look forward to in Silverlight 3, or what are sort of the big customer asks that you guys have been seeing, and any hints you can give us as to what we might be looking forward to.
Well, I think one of the things that we hinted to just from a media standpoint is the IBC conference in Europe this past month is we announced our intent to support H.264 and AAC encoding on the media platform. So that's something from a media standpoint that is already out there and in the public. Brad, I don't know how much you can share about some of our...
So the other super secret projects?
Yes.
Yeah, we actually had the Silverlight 2 ship party today. It got the whole team together, and drank some beers and celebrated it. And I think it's really interesting, you know, we ship the thing today, and then the first question is, then what are we getting tomorrow? What's coming in the future? But that's all good. In fact, the team is super excited about what's coming in the future as well. So investment continues to be very strong there. A lot of the thinking, though, is still a little bit early, as I said, so there's really nothing we can commit to there. I mean, one of the things that we are looking at is how to make it much easier to build business-focused apps on Silverlight. So we're looking at kind of what the top problems are there and seeing what we can do to make those easier. So I would encourage, maybe we can do it the reverse way. You know, I would encourage listeners that are experimenting with Silverlight in that space to feel free to drop me an email. We'll put my blog in there. Feel free to contact me and let me know what you think is interesting things that we should kind of go look at.
It'll be interesting once the DLR ships to see if people start writing JavaScript on the server and the client, if that'll be possible. Kind of like a Jaxter or a Helma framework.
Yeah, so we have been working on kind of getting JavaScript on top of the DLR. There's been some side projects on that. So that I think that will be interesting. Or for that matter, how about Ruby or Python on the client and the server? I think having the DLR, having the CLR, that essentially the same code running on the client and server really opens up a lot of possibilities.
Exactly. Closures all the way down.
Yes.
Kevin?
So one last question on the platform front. Although we know that, you know, Silverlight runs on, for example, the Mac, so far all the development tools have been Windows only. We talked a little bit about the Eclipse-based plugin, but my understanding is that is still Windows only. And I'm curious if there's thoughts to extend the development platform to non-Windows platforms as well.
Well, I'm not sure if we're ready to announce the Visual Studio Mac edition yet. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but I think that we're announcing that next month. Is that right? But
yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, but the Eclipse project is a move in that direction. There are some other tooling support for more, I would say, on the design side for Silverlight and XAML development. Not from Microsoft, but again from the community that's contributed. There's plugins for Photoshop and Illustrator, and Flash exporters or conversion tools and things like that. I'm not sure if I'd classify any of them as commercial grade, but I think that you'll see some of those prop up more so in the community space. You know, the Eclipse project is something that Microsoft's going to be involved in. Are there other IDEs out there that we should be looking at? You know, if there are other ways that we as a team should be supporting any other key development environments to embrace Silverlight, I think that would be good feedback that we'd want to hear. But our bread and butter is Visual Studio, and the tools there are second to none, and we're going to look to enhance those first.
So I've got one last kind of question that will probably make you roll your eyes. I believe at Mix there was some talk of shipping Silverlight on mobile platforms. And so I'm kind of wondering when the mobile version of Silverlight's going to ship, and specifically the iPhone version of Silverlight.
Yeah, I think, and actually Scott Gu had answered a very similar question in the press call this Monday with regard to the iPhone. You know, when I look at the iPhone, I think from a Silverlight perspective and a browser plugin perspective, we'd love to be on as many platforms as possible. You know, there's obvious resource constraints in the team of being able to test certain platforms. There's a lot that's on the roadmap. The priorities have to occur. When you look at the iPhone, the platform first has to enable plugins. Right now, iPhone just doesn't have a plugin enabling platform. Should that change in the future? From Apple, I think that's something that we'd be looking at. And I know, Scott Gu alluded to that we've been talking with Apple, about some things. But again, I mean, the platform there simply just doesn't allow it right now. From a Silverlight mobile perspective, we do have some private engagements right now with some key customers to look at what we've done since that announcement in Mix. You may recall that we announced that in Mix and we said, you know, hey, we'll have a CTP available a month later, and it didn't really show up. In my opinion, that was a good thing. We got immediate and very specific feedback from customers saying, if it doesn't do this, don't bother shipping it. And it didn't, and we didn't. You know, so I think that was a really good decision on our part. The mobile story will come along shortly. There'll be more that will kind of evolve and surface within the next month with regard to Silverlight Mobile.
Well, thanks so much, Brad and Tim. I know you guys are both incredibly busy with PDC fast approaching, and just wanted to say, you know, again, congratulations on shipping Silverlight 2, and thanks for your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. You got a great podcast. Keep up the good work.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time on Herding Code.